Thank you for joining us on this episode of Eminent Teachnology with Dr. Rochelle Newton and Drew Stennett, where we examine current and emerging technologies through the lens of diversity and equality.
So hello, everybody. Welcome back to a new episode of Eminent Teachnology with Dr. Rochelle Newton and Drew Stennett. Today, we're going to continue our talk about technology and mental health. Last week, we started off talking about, I guess the whole conversation was about mental health and like the effects that technology has on folks and continues to have on folks. And we're just going to continue that conversation today. So, Rochelle, after we stopped recording, after our last podcast, we talked a little bit and you had some really good thoughts on like how to how technology can help. Bless you.
Excuse me. I'm sorry.
Bless you again. It's all good.
But okay. I'm sorry.
Yes. Allergies are going crazy.
Yeah. You know, as I said, you know, I suggested this to you, I mean, sort of tongue in cheek, but actually seriously too, is to find ways that technology can help us deal with the crisis in mental health. You know, for a long time, especially in the Black community, being diagnosed with a mental illness, even something simple as depression, and depression is not simple at all, but but something like that was a stigma. And our larger society, you know, if you go back and look, I don't know how much of a historian you are, but I told you, I love American history. So the Kennedys. So the Kennedys, one of their older daughters had a mental health issue. And so they ended up putting her away. That's how much the stigma was and continues to be. It is coming around where we are more accepting of people with mental health issues. We're more willing to consider that that's possible, that someone could have, you know, some kind of break.
Yeah.
But as I told you, when we started talking yesterday, you know, like I have contemplated and tried to kill myself many times, and it's like, it's an ongoing thing. It's not like something I get to the point and I can snap my fingers and I feel better. I don't think that those things anymore. You know, I'm a rational person. So I think about my children, you know, what this would do to my children more than I think about the value or the meaning of life. You know, like, you know, I guess, you know, we're all searching for why we're here, what we're supposed to be doing on this planet. And it looks like right now our planet is in complete breakdown and chaos everywhere. I mean, you know, I read, I was on the news and I saw where somebody killed somebody with a bow and arrow. And I'm sitting here thinking, where are we going? You know, what is it that we're trying to make? And, you know, the right and the left, the liberals and the conservatives, we're all just human beings and we are struggling to survive in a world that is growing more technologically advanced every day, more distance. We are having a conversation right now using technology. Before, we would have these conversations in person. Mm-hmm. And for the purpose of our making our podcast, of course, we do need a digital tool, but we see less of each other. We see less opportunities to interact with each other because we are now so far apart for different reasons, not because we don't want to see each other, but because technology has made it convenient to be remote. And so when you get into the aspect of mental health, you know, I do not believe, this is my personal belief, that we are meant to be alone, that we are meant to be isolated the way we are, that we aren't touched and hugged and, you know, said good things to each other. We don't seem to do that anymore. We seem to be too busy living and surviving. And because of that, we have allowed ourselves to be stressed. A stress to the point that it causes people to have health issues and then mental health issues. So what I asked you, you know, during our last podcast is, are there ways to use technology to help address this issue? So, for example, social media would highlight things where there's cyberbullying or some kind of threat or some kind of, you know, something that could affect someone, or to prevent an image from being seen. But even the national nightly news contributes to people's mental health without attacking anyone. We're just looking at television and all of a sudden someone shot a school up or someone shot a grocery store up. It's a bit much. And is there ways to address this when we haven't been fully truthful with ourselves about how we feel about mental health.
Yeah. Yeah. I think all of those are spot on points. The one thing that always growing up, you always hear like, oh, well, your mental health affects your physical health. And, you know, your happiness sort of affects both. And at the time, when I was younger, I was like, well, physical is one thing and mental is something else. Those two never really interact. And as you get older, you sort of find out they absolutely do interact. I know for me, at least, when stressful times come, I find myself gaining weight because I'm eating more and eating less healthy and not exercising. And it 100% affects your actual health. And the mental health still being a stigma, I think that's still absolutely the case. And you were talking about the Kennedy sister. Was she the one, was she even lobotomized when she was put away? It was an extreme, she's being a little flaky, we're going to lock her up. And also, you know, the doctors are, you know, going to put a needle through her, you know, brain lobe and just mellow her out. I say that in quotation marks because it's, you know, not in a good way, but back then, which is not super long ago, lobotomies were a super common way of, you know, and again, I say helping in quotation marks, it's not really helping, but just saying, oh, this person's acting crazy, we're going to mellow them out by, you know, disconnecting the front part of their brain. And then we just don't have to worry about it anymore. It's not our problem.
Right. But we do that now with pills. We do that with pills and therapy, talk therapy, right? And so so one of my degrees is in psychology, and there's an old saying in psychology, you know, how many psychiatrists does it take to change a light bulb? Zero. The light bulb has to want to change. And really, even in therapy, that is the case. You know, you can go in and tell, you know, everybody knows all our problems relate back to our mothers. At least that's the way Sigmund Freud thought. You know, so, you know, you could go in and talk to your therapist and tell them everything that's ever happened to you and why it happened to you. But, you know, really therapy is, current therapy. And I think this has been a way for a while, talking and medication. The problem is that, you know, we have tried to avoid confrontation, but sometimes you have to confront yourself with whatever is going on. So if you were a molester, so I was molested when I was very young. Coming face to face with that, that's hard as hell. You know, I'm a child, I'm under the age of 10 and somebody's touching me inappropriately. Or at age 19, somebody raped me. You know, all of these things are in my mental health. You know, we used to have this old saying, you probably remember this, sticks and stones will break my bones, but words will never harm me. Really, it's the inverse. You know, sticks and stones will break your bones, but most likely your bones will heal. Those scars that you put in your mind are not so likely to heal because our brains are constantly thinking and rearranging and organizing and putting memory into short-term, long-term memory, moving it all around, which keeps these things in the presence of our mind. And how well we are able to cope with that usually depends on how well we're able to balance our work, play, life, family, all those things in a successful way to become healthy. And in essence, many of us, and I can raise my hand, that struggle is sometimes overwhelming. You know, what do I do? I told you, I didn't know how to separate myself from my job. I still don't. I'm still struggling. You know, there are some days, you know this for a fact, I don't get out of bed. You know, I go in the room and I brush my teeth and I get back into bed and I stay in there all day. Yeah. That's depression and mental health. And there's something else going on. So me being who I am, I'm a little bit stubborn. So I don't want to go see a therapist because I've already been through that route many times. When I was younger, my mother died when I was 19, right around the time that I was raised. My mother died. And I felt such guilt because I wasn't there. So my mother was a domestic, a poor Black woman who had nothing. She gave everything to me and she died. And some of the things I found out after she died. So first she walked out the door, she tripped, she fell on a brick and she laid on the ground for 7 hours. All of that is still as fresh in my brain as it was the day it happened. And that happened in 1970, the late 70s. I don't remember right now the date, but and so I went on this mission of killing myself. I think I told you this. So Buffy, there's a little girl on television show called Family Affair. And she took 100 bear aspirin, drank a Pepsi, and ate a banana and died. Oof. I did that too. I'm still alive. I drove a 1976 Corvette 75 miles an hour into a brick wall. I broke my face, broke all my teeth. If you don't know, most of these are not mine. No. Broke my teeth. But I'm still here. I slipped my wrist so many times. And each time I would have one of these events, I'd be institutionalized to that. I don't know if it was a 72-day commit, 72-hour commit as it is now. But, you know, you'd have to go into a mental hospital for some period of time. And I'd go into hospitals and you see these people in there because their husbands have left them or because they've lost all their finances or whatever it is. And although that sounds pretty trivial, in reality, it doesn't take much to break us. It doesn't take much to break that thing. And I will say, you know, the thing that made me stop trying to kill myself was I had a baby. You know, although my husband and I at the time had separated, I had a brand new baby. And I was already struggling with trying to be an adult. And I didn't want her to have my struggles, too. So that's what stopped me from attempting suicide. But that thought is always present. And what's really interesting is that, you know, on the internet, so now we've got this wonderful thing, the internet, and it's wonderful. The web is great. I'm so glad we have it. It's wonderful, wonderful. But the problem is, so you have fake news, people make up stuff that's not true and put it out there. We have, you know, hyperbole out there. We have all kinds of stuff out there. And the people who are reading it, there's no test to see whether they're capable of absorbing what they're reading. We just assume it. So no matter what we put out, oh, we went to Mexico. I mean, we went on vacation, we went to Mexico, we had a great time. The person who reads that might not read what you intended for them to read. So you're telling them how great a time, but maybe they can't afford to go, or maybe they had a bad experience, or maybe something else, you know, and without those filters, we're allowing people to be subjected to anything that we want to put out there, right? So, you know, I've gained weight, I've lost weight, you know, my husband left me, my husband came back, whatever it is, and there's no filter. Now, try doing that when you're an adolescent, you know, and I mean, like, you know, teens, hormones, all the things that's going on. Try all of that noise in the space without a parent sitting there to offer some reason or logic. Yeah. And you're just drinking it in every day, just drinking it in. And so think about this. So here's a girl that's living in where we won't identify her by race, age, or anything else. But here's a girl living in something. And on the internet, she sees these beautiful models. She sees all these thin people with beautiful hair. They're rich. They've got fancy stuff. And she doesn't have any of that. Yeah. Now, I grew up poor and hungry. And I don't know all of what girls see today. But the way I felt about myself, it was something wrong with me because I didn't have food. It was something wrong with me because I didn't have, I had an outdoor toilet. It was something wrong with me, not the world that I was looking at. And all I saw was visuals. I didn't have an internet and all that back then. All I just could see, you know, they got in a car, you know, they lived in a brick house. They had food, you know, they had events and stuff like that. We didn't have that. So now in this space where we've got all these kids firing up every day, whatever they want to. They're telling you every story they want to tell you. They're firing it up every day. And none of us know how that's affecting them. And so we should not be surprised that there's an increase in suicide and suicide attempts in this age. Then you factor in COVID. So now I've got to wear a mask everywhere I go. I can't go out and hang out with my friends like I used to. I've got to be safe to save my life or to save someone in my family's life, so that I don't make them sick or they don't get sick. Well, here we are, 2021, still fighting COVID and still have all the things that are happening.
Yeah.
So I want to ask you this question. Can you define for me? So we all know what bullying is. What is cyberbullying?
So, I mean, I think before this conversation, I would have called cyberbullying like, making fun of someone from behind a keyboard, like whether it's truthful cyberbullying, like, you know, hey, you know, your family's poor, you're, you know, I don't know what people, how people bully now, but you've got a physical deformity, you are fat, you're skinny, blah, 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 blah. Like something that, something meant to hurt the person that the person can't change, or maybe even the person can change, but isn't changing. Like, you know, you don't want to bully somebody about anything, but sort of thinking it through with what you're talking about, like when we think about, and I'll talk like specifically about Instagram, right? Like you have people out there putting, we'll say like their best life out there, right? Like, hey, check me out. I'm on this personal jet. I'm well-dressed. I'm, you know, super attractive. You know, you can have a life like me. And in reality, like there's tons of filters, right? Like the person doesn't look like they are. They may have been given these, you know, nice clothes to wear just because they're on Instagram. And even like, this is another story I was reading recently, is like, this person's not actually on a private jet. This is like a set that you can go in and take Instagram pictures on that looks like a private jet, but you know, it's not a private jet at all. And it's so much like, it's just sort of like an exaggeration almost of like the person's imagination of themselves, if that makes sense, right? Like they're going up, they're making all these things to make like the perfect picture. And it's all sort of like theater, right? Like they make it look easy, but it's actually like a lot of work goes into it and none of it is real. Like none of it's real. It's all just almost like a painting that just happens to look like a photograph. And I wonder too, like I know a lot of people like to put their best out there. So really what you get is like, if you see, you know, someone posting these pictures two or three times a day, you're seeing like the two or three like highlights of the day, not the 10 or 12, what's the opposite of a highlight, like low light, awful parts of the day. Like, because, you know, people may not want to project that. People may only want to project the great things. And if you're only seeing the great things and you're having all these bad things happening in your life, you may not realize that, you know, everybody has these bad things in their life. They're just not projecting it out there the way they're projecting the good things. And I mean, that's not really like fair to do. Like, and like, I don't want to put bad things online, but I also don't want people to think that like, I live like a life that's, you know, 100% great. I mean, it is very good. Like I don't want to complain about my life, but you know, it's not perfect. Everybody has awful days and everybody has great days. And I don't know, like, I guess just knowing that everybody has those seems like it would be helpful. Do you think go ahead.
I just want to say this about cyberbullying. I think that cyberbullying is being able to use technology to put out a story or a narrative that helps the person who's putting it out make them feel good about themselves. The problem with it is because it's cyber, more people get to see it, right? So yeah. It used to be, you know, like you turn on TV, the only way to see your favorite actor or actress or singer or whatever it is was to see them on TV. Now you can go to the social media outlets and you can follow them. You can hear everything they say and do. And so mm-hmm. when we're only on our best behavior, we're politically correct and all that, you know, we show the best. But then there are sometimes we get upside down and then we show the worst, right? So there was, I can't remember who it was, but there were two famous people having a fight. I think mm-hmm. Elton John and Madonna were the people, I don't remember, but they were having a fight. And the fight was going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And what was really amazing was how the, I guess, fame media covers these things, right? So you get bits and pieces of this all the time.
Yeah.
For younger people, the fact that there is a space that allows something to go viral in minutes means that you are subjected to the outcome of that viral. So if it's great, you know, if you put out something and it went viral, you know, you got a new puppy and the puppy did a backflip, that's great. Everybody loves it. It gets, this, you know, great. But those places where there's someone that's going to be injured as a result of that viral is where we have little control, and where I think that we in technology need to be thinking about ways to moderate and at least put some context around that. Because if we are not doing that, then we all are subjecting anyone who comes across what they see to react in a way that may or may not be healthy. It may or may not be in their best interest to react.
Yeah.
So cyberbully just means that everything that you can put out there, you could put out there. The question is, and to me, I'm old. I'm sure everybody wants to say, you know, it's just the old lady's perspective. But do you really need to put it out there? Does everything, do you, every meal, every place you go, every person you speak to, every conversation you have, you met somebody in the airport, do we all need that every day? Or could you possibly create a portfolio of information, you know, personal social media gets a folder, if you will, and in that portfolio, they put the things that they want to put, and people can selectively review that portfolio, or the person who created it can selectively allow. But without filters and without someone there to guide the action, how do we make sure we keep our people safe, regardless of their age, regardless of their economic or social, sexual orientation, whatever? How do we keep people safe from people who may or may not intend to do harm?
Yeah. Yeah. Do you think that most of the like cyberbullying harm online is intended? Like, it's hard to imagine. I mean, I'm sure some of it is unintended, but I mean, it's hard for me to imagine people unintendedly cyberbullying. I would think that most of it is like directed. I don't know. I mean, I know not everybody's, I mean, I'm sure not everyone's a bad person, but I don't know. It's hard to imagine why people would do it accidentally.
There's a television show that comes on. It's called Web of Lies. It's a wonderful, it's a show that comes on, I think the Discovery Channel or one of those kind of channels. It's a wonderful story. It first broke the story of the girl who encouraged the boy to kill himself. You remember the story?
Oh yeah, yeah.
And somebody asked me, was that cyberbullying? So she used her phone, she texted, she called, she did all of these things, you know, and each time she would encourage him to kill himself. What is that? You know, to me, what does she hope to accomplish by doing it? Did she want him to kill herself because she wanted to kill herself and she didn't have the courage to do so? And so she was, you know, acting out through him. Did she do so because she had power over him? She knew he liked her and that. I mean, these things are the kind of things where we need to try to understand better the purpose of technology and how it's used. And you and I have talked about this many times. To every piece of technology out there, I don't care what it is, there is good and there is bad. Mm-hmm. Technology has provided us so much convenience now, so much convenience. After a while, we aren't going to need to even think. The thing is going to think for us. It's 6 o'clock, or so, it's time for you to eat. Let me bring you your food, and here's what you like. You know, you aren't going to need to think. Yeah. That might be great for people like me. That might be great. But then again, it might not. And so as we are thinking about how these technologies are going, where are the people that are thinking about how to keep us safe? Safe to keep our identities, safe to keep our lives, safe to keep our information private, safe to keep us from killing ourselves because we feel so sad and depressed about ourselves, safe to keep us thinking and using our brains so that machines don't take over. Where is the technology and people thinking about those kinds of things to help us? Because to me, as a person who has attempted suicide, as a person who has those thoughts, randomly and sometimes more frequently than I would like, there has to be someone thinking about these things, or we're going to have outcomes that we may not want. So in Texas, they want to ban all abortions.
Yeah.
Because there'd be life. Life is life. What happens when that life is no longer a fetus or in utero, but has come out into the air and that person kills himself or something like that? Does that life not matter? Or only do we care about getting it out the womb? And then once it gets out the womb, we don't care about what happens to it anymore. There must be some thoughts that go around these that are people who have the money, the time, the research, and the opportunities to think about and apply safety to our every action.
Yeah, absolutely. So do you think, like, sort of jumping back to like therapy, when I was in college and took psychology classes, which was only a few, by no means an expert, like, I think every psychology class was like, therapists are there to like talk to people. Like, they don't judge, they just talk. And like, I think every psychology professor I had said, you know, you can be cured by talking, like talking is the cure. Like, do you think that that's true? Or do you think that it's more than, like you mentioned, talking plus drugs. Is it talking plus drugs, or like, is that enough, or are there other pieces that are still needed to help people in their like mental health crises?
Maybe one of these talks, these podcasts, we'll do a demo and I'll give you an example. So for example, where my problems lie is in abandonment, right? So my birth parents didn't want me, didn't raise me, whatever it is. How long do you think you'd have to talk to me? And talking can be just anybody who cares, anybody who really has a genuine interest in you. But, you know, licensed doctors and therapists usually have better tools and things like that, but whatever. How long do you think it would take for you to unabandon me? You know, so I am more than 20 now years old.
Yep.
So I have been dealing with this for a long time. And to this very day, like leaving Duke, I feel like I've been abandoned again. And it's like what contributes to the part of depressions that I feel sometimes. It's like those moments of I must be worthless. And then to add to that, I'm a Black woman. I'm mouthy. I'm opinionated. So there are people who don't like me for things I don't know what. And so I'm shunned or pushed down or whatever somebody can do. And so they just reenact my feelings of abandonment and worthlessness and not valuable at all. Nobody cares. No one cares about me. No one, one little subtle thing. So one day every Sunday we have Sunday morning breakfast with the family, my husband and our two kids. We have breakfast and we sit around the table and we play these little games. Every once in a while, it brings me to tears. No one in my family reacts to it anymore because they're so used to it. But the problem is it reaffirms I'm not worth anything because they don't, it's not even enough for them to reach out and say, are you okay? And these are the kind of things that talking, you know, you could talk to me, but I've convinced myself that I am worthless, that I'm not valuable. Nobody cares about me. Nobody cares. If I were to fall off the face of the earth today, no one would care. I've convinced myself of that. That's the case. How much talking can get me back, can walk me back from that ledge? And I can promise you, from 19 to 30, I saw a therapist every other day.
Yeah.
I'm still abandoned. I still feel worthless. I still feel like I don't matter. And every time something happens in my life that reaffirms that, it just says, I told you you weren't worthless. You were worthless. I told you you weren't worth anything. So I think talk can help. The problem is it's actually digging down to the root of what the problem is. And most people, and I would not necessarily say I'm the most enlightened person, but most people can't face whatever that hurt is that's so deep inside that the talking can't get it out. What the medication can do is alter your thoughts, right? So lithium, what lithium did for me is make me calm. It slowed down my thoughts. It slowed down how I saw the world. It slowed down the world. But literally, it made me ineffective, useless. I couldn't do anything because all I wanted to do was lie down. That's all I wanted to do is just lie down. So, yes, talk and therapy. But the problem is the person with the problem must be able to exercise that demon inside of them, lay it on the table, dissect it, and then put it back together. But they also need reinforcements around them, people telling them that they are good, that they are valuable, that they do matter, and not lip service, but actually actions to say they do care. So talk, therapy, medicine, whatever, but also you need a support system.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to Eminent Teachnology. If you like the show, please review, subscribe, and recommend us to your friends and family. We'd love to hear feedback from you as well. You can email us at eminentteachnology@gmail.com. See y'all soon.